Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Green 19 podcast. I'm Dominique Yates. I'm joined by Ryan Wood and Tom Silverstein. It's day two of the NFL draft, but day one for the Green Bay Packers. Yeah. Made two picks today, and, you know, they, you can say, filled some needs that they were looking for with a corner and a defensive tackle, starting with we had Chris McClellan. He was in the third round of defensive tackle. Brandon Cisse out of South Carolina, he went in the second round. So, yeah, we can touch on those and also touch on some receiver news with the Packers, starting with Jaden Reed. But, Spoon, just I'll let you kind of start it off with your thoughts on just the two picks that the Packers made.
It was need day. So they hit both of the needs that I think were generally considered top on their shelf, and they got a corner who I don't think is going to help them that much in the first year. He's going to be kind of a developmental guy, but talented and athletic, you know, long arms, good speed. Probably going to need to build up his body a little bit. But the other kid, Chris McClellan, is a, you know, big old guy, kind of like Warren Brinson, but a little bigger even.
Yeah, it's like 315 or so?
Yeah, and with a little bit of pass rush ability and enormous hands, 11-inch hands and 34-inch arms, something like that. I mean, crazy. Doesn't translate into a, you know, dominating player, but it's kind of physical guy they need to add into the mix. So, you know, from that standpoint, yeah, if you're just doing it on paper, they hit two areas that they needed to.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you know, I think Milt Hendrickson, director of football operations, had the quote of the night where he said, "I'm going to sleep a whole lot better tonight," because this was a daunting task entering this draft for the Packers without a first-round pick, knowing that they're very clearly defined needs. And they were able to hit the two biggest needs in a way that did not feel like they were just drafting for need. Like, it felt like they got some value, and they matched that with the two biggest needs on their roster. So in a way, that's very fortunate, right? They're fortunate that in Brian Gutekunst's words, he did not feel like the corner class was all that great.
Yeah.
And he got a guy that profiles as a legitimate potential NFL starting cornerback. He is going to have to develop. I'm not sure I'm ready to write him off for his rookie season yet. I think that he's going to have an opportunity to compete with Benjamin St. Just, and the better corner will win out of camp, and that'll be your starter. And I don't know who that'll be. But he reminds me in a way of a little bit of Eric Stokes. Good size, not quite the straight line speed, but more physical than Eric Stokes, and neither of them can catch. So, you know, the ball skills are for Eric Stokes is what is going to be, what sure looks like on paper for Brandon Cease, just two interceptions in three college seasons. But if he can be a competitive cover, that's what this Packers team needed more than anything, is more competitive covers on their roster. So if he can do that, that's a step in the right direction. And then trading up in the third round, seven spots for Chris McClellan, who, if you watch the, if you read the NFL draft nicks, not high on him. But why a Chris McClellan over a Dominique Orange, who went later in the third round? Six sacks last season. Like, there is some power rush to his game. There's some college pass rush productivity, not just a pure nose. He can play nose, but as Milt Hendrickson said, he can play three technique. He has versatility on the defensive line. And so both of those rooms that needed to add bodies added two intriguing bodies. And now we see what type of player they become.
I mean, you both summed it up. They weren't looking for starters. They were looking for depth. Like you said, they were looking for bodies. Brandon Cisse is a 20-year-old. He didn't turn 21 until July. I think it's just July 3rd, I think, is when he turns 21. So, again, you know what you're working with when you have a guy like this. And they talked about Chris McClellan, like I said, a big guy, but his technique, he needs to work on that. That was the big thing the analyst said. He gets beat too much. He plays high. So there's a lot that they have to work with these two guys. But again, you just need bodies there. You need some competition and to push some of these other guys. So again, at least big picture, these are guys that played in the SEC, you know, so they have some experience. So you know, we'll just see what happens when camp rolls around and how they'll mesh with the veteran guys and in Jonathan Gannon's new system.
Yeah, you know, their second rounders over the past few years have been, game-ready guys. I mean, ready-to-play guys. Adrian Cooper, Jaden Reed, guys like that, Belton. You know, they've been physically and mentally ready to play. I don't know, you know, like Cisse, I question whether that's going to be the case. You know, McClellan, he's going to have the physical ability to play. There's no question about that. All defensive tackles, rookies struggle. You know, it's the question is, can he, as the season goes on, do what, bring up Warren Brinson again, who started to come into his own a little bit as the season wore on. And, you know, that's something they're going to watch. But he doesn't have to play right away. You know, Hargrave, Wyatt, Brinson, Stackhouse, if he makes a team, they have a core, and this is just another piece of that. So
yeah, that's something that really stood out to me. The other thing that I thought about when talking with Brian Gutekunst after this, and Spoon, I think you actually asked the question when they were drafting these guys, were they specifically looking for guys that fit Jonathan Gannon's system compared to just best available players? I guess what were kind of the takeaways from that answer?
Well, you know, Gutekunst said, no, we just pick guys, you know, who can play multiple positions, and because you never know. But I don't believe that 100%. I think they know, you know, they know how he plays his corners. They don't need a total press man guy who lives on an island like that, because that's not how Gannon plays in the secondary. So, I, you know, and then McClellan's a big guy who can move a little bit, and that's totally what Gannon wants. Just think Philadelphia Eagles, you know, big guys who can penetrate, who can get after ball carriers, hold it, and then get upfield. I think that's kind of how he fits. So that's why I don't think they wanted you know, Orange or a guy who just going to sit in the middle and not be able to chase down the field.
The more you can do.
Yeah. I think even in your mock draft, though, you figured.
Yeah, first time in 13 years I actually got the pick right.
That's true.
Blind squirrel finds a nut not quite once a decade, but once every 15 years or so. Yeah, that was a big night for me. Thanks for recognizing that, Tom. I appreciate that.
That's right. So and it was kind of funny because I think on our last pod I brought up Lee Hunter. And I think he went one pick before the Packers, or maybe two picks before.
Yeah, a couple, yeah.
Yeah, it was like one or two before.
This is your second or third draft?
It's my second.
So you got to wait 11 more drafts, and then you too might one day get the pick right.
Well, that's after right. 37 years, you can get a guy who hasn't even been drafted yet.
How many times have you done that, Spoon? Certainly, I imagine that it's happened before, but probably on one hand.
Well,
it's very rare.
I don't do mock drafts.
Okay.
I never have. That was always Bob's. Yeah. Job, and so I didn't have to have that kind of pressure, but something just told me that it was going to fall that way, and I overanalyzed, you know. I just should have just stuck with instincts that they were going to fill needs.
If you noticed, I disappeared for a brief moment right after the pick and right after we talked to National Scout Mike Owen, and it wasn't to talk to Brandon Cisse, although I did. It was to take a victory lap around Lambeau Field. I was kind of feeling myself a little bit there.
That's right. So you guys are the brains. I'm the eye candy. That's what I've learned.
Okay.
So you do the mock drafts and the great analysis and insights, and I just sit here and smile.
We're gonna put that on your tombstone one day.
Just the
eye
candy. So I do want to jump into, if there's nothing more draft-wise, I do want to talk about the Jaden Reed.
No.
Do you have anything?
I got to say, usually for me it takes all 3 days of the draft to kind of identify the theme. That's always what I'm looking for, is what is the theme of the draft. I feel like even more than they hit maybe their two biggest needs, I mean, that's the story of this night, but the theme of this draft seems pretty clear, and it's a continuation of what Brian Gutekunst did in free agency. And I'm curious to see if this holds up day three. But just in what Brian Gutekunst was saying tonight about it, you know, he's interested in moving up day three. He feels like the board's still strong. He wanted to move back into the third round and make a third pick tonight. Ultimately, cost too much, but he still has that appetite. He has five picks on day three. If he hits all five picks, if he doesn't add more, which he could, but if he doesn't add more, and it didn't sound like he was itching, overly eager to add more, that would be seven picks in his fewest in nine drafts. Mm-hmm. And if you look at Brian Gutekunst went through the early part of this decade in that transition to Jordan Love. He went through a succession of volume shooting drafts. We're talking 12, 13 picks, where he was really building this roster, really doing the heavy lifting. The difference between that and seven picks, this is a GM that is really fine-tuning the roster now.
Yeah.
The building, the heavy lifting has been done the past few years.
Right, exactly.
And he's fine-tuning the edges of this roster. He's adding bodies at positions of need, developmental guys that can come in, maybe not have to play right away, but can be there and add depth for now and develop into something of a future core potentially down the road. This is a GM that's taken a different tact to this draft. Now, part of that's obviously not having a first-round pick, right? But I also think that it's a byproduct of these guys that you brought in over the last few years, you're going to have to pay them now. You're going to have to pay them soon. Jaden Reed being one, Christian Watson potentially being another, Tucker Kraft. You're going to have to pay these guys. You're not doing the heavy lifting at this point in the development of this roster. You are fine-tuning the edges, and I think that's what you're seeing.
Well, I guess I thought about this. I might have said it maybe a month or two ago when I looked at the offseason moves, looked at the roster. I just felt that the way the moves that they made, that Brian Gutekunst, Matt LaFleur, they all pretty much felt, if they stayed healthy last year, they were going to win a Super Bowl. Because you can kind of tell the way they made some of these moves. I was like, I think they are that confident. Would they have? Who knows? I mean, what, 9-3-1 heading into that Denver game? But I don't know. It's who knows?
Two things really matter for that.
But that's what stood out to me.
High-end talent, roster talent, especially a quarterback, they have that. And then depth. Hmm. And they're adding depth now. Like this is a GM being selective in how he's using these picks. I think it is a fortunate circumstance for them that there is value in certain classes at positions of need, but I also think that positions of need is something that is on his mind. I mean, Brian Gutekunst told us at the start of the week, which never happens, exactly what he's going to do. He said two things. He said he's going to add bodies at corner, and he says he has an appetite for a nose tackle. And I'll be if the first two picks were adding bodies at corner, which I think another one's probably coming day three, and going and getting trading up seven spots to get a nose tackle. Like he telegraphed what he was going to do.
Yeah. I mean, they still got work to do. There's no question about that. This is as far as like, oh, is this a Super Bowl roster? I mean, they still got to keep working on that.
That's still not a Super Bowl team.
Yeah,
be a Super
still
Bowl
not.
Roster all you want on paper. It doesn't mean that you're going to go. There's something about the development and how you guide through a season on the field that has been missing.
Oh, yeah. So, like, I thought about that was like, I felt that was their mindset, that's what they had, but only time will tell. So I do want to kind of jump into the Jaden Reed news. Was a 3-year, $50 million extension. They got it done. I mean, I'm not surprised by it at all. I guess if they were going to make those moves, I thought maybe they would go for like Christian Watson first, or I didn't know how it would fall down the list in terms of trying to get some of these extensions, but I mean, Jaden Reed, there's no surprises they would want a guy like that because Matt LaFleur loves his jet sweeps.
Mm-hmm.
Jaden Reed is a jet sweep guy.
Yeah.
Matt LaFleur loves to put guys in motion, and Jaden Reed is the main guy that does that. So,
yeah. I was a little surprised coming off a year in which he was injured and not as productive and had a crappy playoff game that they were that willing to do it. Now, you know, they obviously crunched numbers and were like, okay, what's Jaden Reed going to be worth next year if he hits the open market? And they believe he's going to bounce back. And that's what contracts that are done a year ahead are projections into what the market's going to be. You know, so Jackson Smith Najibra just got a $42 million per year deal. And now the rate is right around 30. Remember when Devontae Adams was trying to get 20, or 22?
Yeah.
It's now 42. And so that's going to continue to climb. And Christian Watson's going to break that. Mm-hmm. You know, he's going to get 30. Mm-hmm. So if they can get a deal done. So it might turn out that this isn't a bad deal for them in the long run. It sounds like a lot. But I just, it's not the guy I would have picked was going to get a deal done right away. I just thought that he was a guy they could wait and maybe do during the season. But, you know, if they're right about him, if he plays like he did the first 2 years, then it'll be a good move.
Right. You can tell that's what they're banking on.
I don't for sure think it. When I heard the figures, it didn't sound like a lot to me at all. $16 million annually in new money. I was more surprised that Jaden Reed was ready to do that, something sub-20 on what the receiver market is, instead of playing it out. But why did he do that? Because he got $20 million guaranteed right now. He got. I think that was a very major attractive piece to this, is I can have this lump of cash right now. Okay. But if you would have told me that the Packers would get him for $16 million, I think they would. I would have told you they'd be very, very interested and have a strong appetite for that type of deal. And what that is, he is – you're talking about kind of money – defines roles. You know, a year ago there was the report about Jaden Reed wanting to, you know, clarify his role. Is he a number one receiver? He's a very strong slot receiver at $16 million annually. That is what he is to this offense, and it's what he is as a player. He is a strong slot productive receiver, and that's an important piece of this offense, but he's not a number one X. He's not going to be a Jaxon Smith-Njigba. If Christian Watson plays 17 games this season, stays healthy, and produces like he did in the back half of last season coming off the torn ACL, he will be a $30 million receiver as an X. They are in two different tax brackets. That defines roles. But in terms of where it lined up, I think this is the proverbial, you offer a lot of cash up front and a guaranteed signing bonus, and you're a little light on the annual salary, and it worked out for both sides.
Yeah. I think it kind of reminds me to like Zach Tom last year. Like the signing bonus that he got up front was just, I guess it's one of those too good to pass up type of deals. And yeah, I mean, Jaden Reed, good things happen when he's on the field. I thought about last year in Brazil against Philly. Like, he was one of the best players on that field in that game. So, you know, when he's healthy, he's a big part of the offense. And, you know, we'll see how those guys continually mesh and grow. And I'm just really interested in seeing how roles will be defined this year. Because, you know, there's no Romeo Doubs, no Dontavian Wicks. And obviously, you know, he might draft a receiver. You know, wouldn't be surprised at all if Brian Gutekunst drafted a receiver this weekend. But I'm fascinated to see how will they kind of be defined in training camp, who will be able to get some of those opportunities. So there's just a lot there in the receiver room I'm curious about and how things might play out.
Yeah, I think things have kind of mapped out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think, you know, you've got Watson, he's going to be the X. You got Golden, and, you know, he's going to be the Y. And then you've got Reed, and he's going to be moving all over the place. And then I don't know what Savion Williams will do, but, you know, that's another factor in there. And then they'll have a fifth guy. And, you know, if all things are equal, those three guys are their three receivers, and that's who's going to be on the field.
That's your 11 personnel.
Yeah. And, you know, and then you have to incorporate Tucker Kraft in that. He has to be a big part of it. But I do think they have to continue to build a little bit in that receiver room. I think he's going to take a receiver, particularly someone with some return ability. You know, Sky Moore's, I wouldn't count on him being a factor in as a receiver, but who knows? Maybe he's Bo Melton next year. Maybe he can give you something like that. So, but I would guess that they're going to bring in some receivers.
The thing is, Sky Moore at this point on this depth chart is a number six receiver, and that's not a guy that you're counting on anyway.
He's number five. Who am I forgetting?
Oh. Bo Melton's your number five.
If he's a receiver.
Well, he was a cornerback last year that played no defensive snaps and played receiver. So they can say all they want and list him all they want on the roster. I'm going to go with what he's actually playing on the field, which is wide receiver. So that's your number five. A number five receiver is not a guy that you're counting on to have a heavy load in the offense. He's primarily a special teamer. And so now – where I agree with you is, okay, if injuries do hit to one of those top three, you start to get awfully thin. So if the value is there on day three to add a guy you feel really strong about developing, has some upside there, you bring him in, you're not counting on him as a rookie, but you feel like he can develop maybe later on in the year when injuries hit, he can kind of fill a role. Yeah, if the value's there for that, then absolutely. But they don't need to do that. That's not like – there's not a mandate. I don't think the Jaden Reed extension precludes them from re-signing Christian Watson, and I don't think it precludes them from adding a receiver, but there is some security in that. The other part, I agree with you when it comes they've mapped out the roles to this passing game this spring. Like, they are so much more defined right now than they ever have been the past few years. But the other part, they've needed to do that. Like, we've been talking about this for years now, and they have bent over backwards for years trying to say, oh, there's no need to have a number one. We can placate everybody in this off. It reached a point where enough was enough. There were too many mouths to feed. At some point, you got offensive football is about getting the ball to your best players as much as possible. I think you're actually going to see that in this passing game this fall.
Maybe.
I'm skeptical because I don't think Matt LaFleur schemes to get guys open. I think he schemes to against defenses.
Yeah.
And Love takes what, you know, the defense gives him.
Yeah.
And I'm just not convinced that, you know, they're going to make Christian Watson a 100-catch receiver, which he should be.
Yeah.
Or Matthew Golden a 70-catch receiver. I
agree.
I don't think that's in Matt LaFleur to do it that way.
Here's the thing, Spoon. I agree with you, but I also think what you're seeing is Brian Gutekunst helping this play caller and this quarterback help themselves.
Maybe
they don't take a receiver day three. Maybe, you know what? Okay, yeah. I get the need to barricade against injuries, but at the end of the day, Christian Watson can be a 100-catch receiver, and that's a good thing for this offense. And if you're not going to do it, he'll do it for you.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what it is, because I'm with you. Whether it's the play caller or the quarterback, that hasn't happened. I'm not sure it's naturally inclined to happen, but at some point the GM comes in and says, get the ball more to the guy that runs 4-3, that's 6-5, that can pull away from defenses on any spot of the field, any down.
I'll see it when I believe it. I'll believe it when I see
believe
it.
Believe it when I see it.
You know,
that was why I made that point about the roles, seeing how they'll map out. It's like you would think on paper the roles are mapped out, like signs still delivered, but
it's so weird because, you know, in Sean McVay's offense, Puka Nakua gets the ball.
He's getting the ball.
Always.
Seahawks, Jackson Smith and Jigba's getting the ball.
Yeah. Cooper, what's his face, got the ball all the time for the Rams.
Yeah.
You know, back when he was there.
Cooper Kupp, yeah.
Cooper Kupp, yeah. Adams, you know, even in San Francisco, he makes sure George Kittle gets the ball, you know, 5-6 mm-hmm. times a game.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen here. It just doesn't happen. It's really weird to me that it doesn't. And, you know, maybe that's something, maybe going back to the he's digging to the roots of his offense. Maybe they're going to do something like that. But
yeah,
I just think it's awfully coincidental. Okay, you want to insist on Romeo Doubs getting 80 plus targets in a season? I'm going to let him sign with New England. No, he can go. Oh, Dontavian Wicks is really good at route running. His release package, he gets open a lot. So you really want to give him a lot of targets? Trade him to Philly. Oh, you're not going to play Jordan Morgan at left tackle. Okay, well, just let Rashid Walker go to Carolina. Like, it just – a lot of these decisions are clearing those spots on the field for them to the point where it's like, okay, maybe that's a little bit intentional.
Yeah, it's like the very subtle messages like, here mm-hmm. you go. This is what we want to see. I even told the media, yeah, Jordan Morgan's going to be tackle. Anthony Belton's going to be a guard. We like Christian – like, he said all of these things. So we'll see if that communication – you could say it's on point.
Either verbal or transactional.
Gutekunst is in charge of acquiring the players, and LaFleur is in charge of using them.
Yeah.
And
that's the model.
Never the twain shall meet.
It's so, very Moneyball, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. It is Moneyball. I mean, he did do do that.
Yeah.
You know, that's why I traded Wicks. You know, stop messing around with that and get the ball to Matthew Golden.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if that's going to be enough.
Yeah, so I don't know. I think that, but that's also the part about, like, the Super Bowl teams. Like, they play to their strengths, and they dominate to those strengths. Like,
absolutely.
Who's the best players? We're getting that person the ball. Like we're going to dominate and dictate how the game is played instead of so much of what the defense does or just going free flow or make sure everyone's happy, everyone's getting target. Like, you, I mean, and I thought about even during the owners' meetings when he kind of talked about day one, we need to tell guys what their roles are, how do they follow them. We'll see if that happens. Easier said than done. Right, but maybe there will be those come to Jesus meetings with those guys and say, you're getting the ball, you won't get it as much, or prove that you can get the ball.
When you have guys like Christian Watson and Matthew Golden, you know, Watson's a special athlete. Yeah. You know, there's just not many guys like him.
Yeah.
And Golden, there's not too many guys who have his hands and his speed. At some point, you know, there's fewer guys who can cover them than the average wide receiver. So why aren't you taking those odds, and why aren't you getting him the ball as much as possible? You know, and I don't know. Until they do that, you know, instead of letting the defense dictate where the ball goes, I don't know. I think it's a matchup game. I think the NFL is a matchup game.
Oh, it is.
Along those lines, it is. To the point that you made, Dom, about Super Bowl teams play to their strengths, there seems to be this, it just, they don't say it. You don't hear from Matt LaFleur, but you see the way that he tries to placate in the scheme. There seems to be this pervading thought of, hey, the strength is the scheme. The scheme is the strength. We have all these talented players. You can scheme everyone up, and that's going to be the strength. But at the end of the day, it is about matchups.
Yeah.
It is about the players making plays. And not every player can make as many plays as the next guy. You have to identify who are your best playmakers, which guys are most capable of making game-breaking plays, and then those are the guys that you ride. Those are the guys that carry you to that point. And they haven't done that. But the Seattle Seahawks sure did that.
Yeah.
You see teams get to the Super Bowl. Scheme matters. I'm not going to say it doesn't matter in the NFL, but it's the players that are making plays.
Yeah.
And so now you're... You talk about your top three as a receiver trio and 11 personnel, Christian Watson, Matthew Golden, Jaden Reed in the slot. That's a pretty good triumvirate at the top. Let them feast. Let them make plays. Tucker Kraft doing what he does. Add that in. Instead of trying to have six, seven, eight receivers all have a piece.
I mean, the Seahawks, they did nothing special in that Super Bowl. Like, Kenneth Walker ran the ball really well. They got the ball to Jackson Smith and Jigba. They played really good defense and were clean on special teams.
Right.
Sometimes it's almost like it sounds.
But they did it well.
And they did it well, right?
What they did well.
Yes.
You know?
But it's like they didn't have to reinvent the wheel or drop some magical game plan. I jokingly say this, but sometimes it's almost like backyard football. It's like, oh, I think Christian Watson is better than this defender. I'm just going to get him the ball and watch him make a play. Sometimes it might just be that matchup and take it.
Well,
right?
I hate to bring it up because, you know, I was critical of it at the time, but Aaron Rodgers played like that.
Yeah.
You know, he saw a matchup, he went to it.
Yeah.
Moderation,
he did it to,
Spoon.
Yeah, right.
Moderate.
To the extreme.
15 targets a game for Devontae Adams is not what they need right now.
All right, but it's not forcing it to a guy, but it's recognizing when a guy, you know, isn't necessarily in the play, and you make him in the play. And I'd like to see LaFleur give Love that opportunity to do that.
Yeah. It's not a throw he can't make.
Yeah.
Or can't make, like, he can make any throw.
Yeah, exactly. Let him play a little bit of street yard ball.
Yeah.
You know, once in a while, you got to do that.
Yeah.
Tucker Kraft does not need 12 targets every game, but there's absolutely no reason why he can't have at least six every game.
Man.
Christian Watson does not need 10 targets every game. There's absolutely no reason he can't have eight every game. It's about finding the balance. There's a difference between forcing it to a guy and not prioritizing matchups at all. But what I'll say is this, and this was completely unintentional, but I think this entire conversation just proved why tonight was a defensive draft. Because they've got the guys. It's on offense for this team right now. It's not about having the guys or not. They have the guys. It's about how to use the guys.
Yeah.
That's where this offense is. Defense, they had the holes. And tonight they added a couple really key needs and some talent at some very specific positions. And I think it'll be very interesting day three how they map that out.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to wrap it up. We're heading into day three now, but hey, this was day one for the Packers on the draft, so they made two picks. They have more coming up this weekend. It's going to be a long Saturday, and it's going to be busy. And but we'll still be monitoring and watching how it all comes into place. Of course, Spoon still has the blog. He had it going all day on this Friday, having more on Saturday. We've had all kinds of stories, video analysis, and of course, we'll have another podcast coming up this weekend, too, to kind of put a ribbon on the NFL draft. So thank you all for checking out the Green 19 podcast. For Ryan Wood, Tom Silverstein, I'm Dominique Yates.